This week on the Ocean Cruisers podcast, I'm having a chat with Luke and Adam from the sailing YouTube channel, The Sailing Brothers. Luke and Adam are two brothers from Wales in the UK. Before they started the cruising journey, they both worked in logistics for supermarkets. They've been living on boats before they started cruising and gained experience by circumnavigating the UK before they set off on their current trip. Prior to setting off on a larger voyage, they decided to upgrade to a larger sailboat and bought a rival 34 from 1979 called Atlas. So far, they've left the UK and sailed south to the Canaries, down to Cape Verde, across the Atlantic, headed north through the Caribbean and up the East Coast, and dropped anchor in New York City. If you want to follow Luke and Adam's journey, check out their YouTube channel, The Sailing Brothers. And if you want to support the podcast, take a look at our Patreon page. Enjoy the chat.
So whereabouts in Wales are you from?
Cardiff.
Cardiff, South Wales. We grew up in Barry.
Yeah.
So, and then
Nice.
Yeah, moved to Cardiff and I got a job in Asda and Adam got a job in Iceland doing deliveries.
I was going to ask, was it two separate supermarkets that you were working in, or like, was it the same one or the same chain? So you were in Asda and you're in Iceland?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Asda's better.
Right. Well, Nick always said that.
I was going to say, who's the best employer?
But we're doing similar roles, just driving vans around, delivering customers' food to people's doors and things.
Yeah.
Just delivering and shopping.
So how long were you doing that for? A
couple of years, 3 years.
Yeah, I was in Asda for 4 years. I'd done it for 4 years. I really loved it. My best job I've ever had. Working in Asda. It's so nice there, friendly.
Mate, I imagine it's just like a very chilled out job. Well, not in some ways. I imagine like there's probably quite a lot of work involved, like physical work and stuff like that. But yeah, in terms of like, once you sign off, I suppose you just sign off and then you go home. And that's like, I think probably some of the nicest jobs you can get like that, where you just don't have to worry about stuff after you clock out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. After you finish, you just go home and totally forget about it. You don't have to think about it anymore. You do next go in. Yeah, no responsibility at all. Yeah. Just make sure you deliver the shopping on time in the designated time slot.
Yeah,
forgetting the words. Yeah, now.
It's been so long, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it was really
it's been such a long time.
During COVID times, you know, everyone was trying to get shopping delivered to their houses because no one wanted to leave their house. Yeah. Oh, it was super, super busy during COVID time. So we're working like 50 hours a week, weren't we?
Yeah, and people, it wasn't just the busyness. It was people that were ordering like £200 to £500 worth of shopping. So they were like, you know, we had like totes. And then some people were ordering like 20 boxes of food. It was such hard work and stressful. It was horrendous, really.
Hated it. Oh, so like what did the supermarkets do during that period? Did they get like external contractors to come in and help doing deliveries or something like that?
Iceland did.
I think Asda didn't.
We had extra vans in Iceland and we were getting 0-hour contract workers to come in and drive the extra vans just to help out because the load was just huge. Too much.
Yeah, I imagine. So people weren't actually, because I wasn't in the UK for that. In Spain, like you actually weren't allowed to leave your house. I don't know if they ever did that in the UK. I'm not sure. But were people actually allowed to go to supermarkets, or like were they just having to shop online and then you guys were just delivering it?
You could leave your house for exercise a certain amount of hours.
You'd have to go to the
exercise
supermarket.
And to go shopping or go to the, you know, doctors or something like that, but that was it.
Right.
Most people were trying to work from home, but all the people working in retail, they just have to keep the country running, and they were going out and working crazy hours because retail was just rammed, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Crazy times.
Yeah, I bet that would have been crazy.
Yeah.
So it was working for Iceland and Asda that forced you to like travel around the world.
Pretty much. Yeah.
It didn't start like that, did it?
No, we started off. I think it was about maybe 10, 12, or maybe 15 years ago, Luke decided he wanted to buy a boat, a big boat. It was a Hurley 22. Don't know if you've heard of them.
Not heard of that, no.
Yeah, Hurley 22, a long keel, little boat. And we picked it up from somewhere on the south coast, wasn't it?
Yeah, somewhere.
Yeah, on the south coast. And we got a company to put it on a trailer, and we got it trailered back. And at the time, then we joined Cardiff Yacht Club. It's like a nice little yacht club in the bay. And we kept the boat there, and we were sailing our little Hurley 22 in the Bristol Channel, and that was really good fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was rough at times, wasn't it? Yeah, with a little boat like that,
a little boat.
But it's severe tides there as well, isn't it?
Oh yeah, like 12-meter tides.
Yeah, like some of the highest in the world. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, second highest
in the world. Yeah,
second highest.
Yeah, so that was.
I think the highest is somewhere close to where you are now, isn't it? Isn't it? I'm sure it's near Nova Scotia, the area with the highest.
Yes, Bay of Fundy, which is just on the other side of Nova Scotia. Yeah. 16-17 meter tide. So. Crazy,
bonkers, isn't it?
Weird.
Yeah. It is.
So that's where you started out doing most of your sailing, in like a 22 footer in the Bristol Channel.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, before that, as kids, our dad had a small boat, Jaguar 25, and he was a member of Club. And we used to sail dinghies, little mirror dinghies around the bay. Mm. But it wasn't the bay then, it was tidal because it wasn't a barrage back then. It was all mud flats. Tides to come in, flood the mud flats.
Yeah.
We used to go sailing when the tide was in, these little dinghies, and mess around in the mud and stuff like that as kids. And I suppose that's where we got the bug from, wasn't it?
Yeah.
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 That's really nice.
Yeah, we kept the Hurley 22 for a couple of years. And then we upgraded to a Sabre 27.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And in 2017, we sailed that around the UK, but we didn't film any of it for YouTube or anything. Which way did we sail it? We sailed...
We went...
Anti-clockwise.
Anti-clockwise.
But we didn't go around the top of Scotland. We went through the Caledonian Canal, through Loch Ness, and cutting off the top of Scotland, which is amazing. I loved it, but Adam didn't like it because there was too many gnats and bugs.
Mosquitoes.
But yeah, we've done that, and then we went back to work, and then we sort of made a pact that we'll try and work in the winter, and then in the summer we'll go sailing, have 5-6 months off. So we were organising to do that, to like sail around the UK again, and then COVID hit, didn't it? And then we couldn't do it, which is disappointing.
Yeah,
and then I was in work one day, and I saw a Rival 34 for sale on the south coast. I text Adam saying, "Oh, have you seen this Rival 34? We've got to get this boat. It looks amazing." So he's like, "Oh yeah, okay then."
And we ended up going down to the south coast to see it, and it was this boat. It needed quite a bit of work. It was like left on a little pontoon, and the guy who owned it was just using it to entertain. He didn't really sail it anywhere, and a lot of the woodwork, the finish had come off, and it was quite cheap. So we went back to Cardiff, and then we were thinking about it some more, and we went back down to see it again, and we put an offer in, and then the offer was accepted, and then it was time to sell the Sabre 27 we had, which we were living on at the time to save money in the marina.
Oh yeah, we did sell it, didn't we?
Yeah, and make arrangements to go down and collect the Atlas, our Rival 34, and we sailed her back. That was great fun, wasn't it? Yeah. Sailing it back in nice bigger boats and seeing how she sails, how she handles, and we took her back to Cardiff Marina, and then we went to Penarth Marina and started living there on Atlas to save money, and then working and working and working in retail to save as much money as we can. And that's when we decided to sail around the UK again. It's dropped out, is it?
dropped out.
Yeah,
are you back?
Yeah.
I think that was my side actually. Yeah, it said my internet was unstable. Sorry about that. Yeah, I think I just lost you where you said you were then, once you got back, you were working to like save up cash, I imagine.
Yeah, saving up lots and lots of cash, doing as many hours as we can, and then we decided to sail Atlas around the UK clockwise.
Clockwise, this time, yeah.
Clockwise, and Luke said, oh, let's start the YouTube,
innit? Yeah, I said, we were only originally going to go away and sail around the UK for the summer for like 5 months. And I come up with the idea, said, let's get some GoPros and then we can video what we do, like every passage we make. And then we can put it on YouTube. And then when we go back to work in the winter, we've got something to look back to and look forward to keep us going, working in Asda and Iceland to, keep us
motivated.
Yeah, to keep us motivated. But we started uploading the episodes and people started enjoying them, and it just sort of took off from there, didn't it? And then people were like saying start a Patreon, and we eventually started a Patreon in Scotland, and that sort of took off a little bit. And then when we got down to the south coast, I was like saying to Adam, let's not go back to Asda and Iceland. Let's take a chance and sail down south and do the Atlantic, or maybe sail across the Atlantic, because we've always dreamed to sail across the Atlantic, and then come back and do the Atlantic circuit and come back to the UK. And Adam was like, no, I really don't fancy doing that because we might run out of money. It might not work out. I'd rather go back to work for 6 months and then try it again. I said, you know, we're on a roll now, so we gotta go for this.
Yeah, you know, keep on rolling with it.
Yeah, YouTube is going okay. Yeah. So I eventually convinced Adam. We went back to Pembroke for a small refit and get like a new tender, because ours was like falling apart, and we done some work, didn't we, on the rudder and changed the shoes on there. We do all the work ourselves, and we got back to Pembroke and we pulled the boat out of the water, and the prop shaft, the stainless steel prop shaft was cracked, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was split.
It was like, oh, is it open?
Oh, no way.
Yeah, it's like split in two.
It had the stress cracks in it. Managed to take the engine out of the boat, and then we took the prop shaft off. You could hold it in your hand and twist both sides, and it was the whole thing. You could see the big cracks all down it. And the guy who owned the boatyard, the marine engineer, said, I don't know how you managed to sail around the UK and get without losing your prop and your shaft on the way.
Yeah, like that sounds like it must have been moments away from just breaking to bits. Like you've literally just taken it out in time.
Yeah. That's what he said.
Yeah.
Really, yeah. So then we had to try and find an engineering company locally in Pembrokeshire, Rudders Boatyard, to make us a new prop shaft. And that was a bit of a mission. And then that delayed us, didn't it, by about 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, we wanted to get going.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, because at the time it was September and it was the end of the season, and we were making plans to sail from Pembrokeshire all the way across the Bay of Biscay down to northern Spain, and we were running out of time. Mm. You can imagine when the October winds start and the southwesterlies really kick in and the winter storms
start
across the Biscay, it can get really bad. But it all worked out in the end, didn't it?
Yeah, we sailed. Yeah. Left early October. Sailed across the Bay of Biscay.
How come it was taking them so long to make a prop shaft? Was it like a weird diameter or a strange length or something? Like, why was that taking 4 to 6 weeks?
I think because it was Pembrokeshire. Everything moves a little bit slower in Pembrokeshire, and everyone's a bit more chilled out, and there's not that many places to get things done there because it's a bit more rural and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So your mission was like originally to sail around the UK in that boat when you got it. And then it was basically a random idea to just take it across the other side of the Atlantic.
Yeah, Luke's idea.
Yeah, it was totally random. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty mad. Had you been thinking about that for a long time, or was it just like fed up one day? Okay, let's go to the other side of the world.
Like, we've always wanted to sail across the Atlantic.
Yeah. We never thought it would happen because we had basic jobs. We didn't have much confidence.
it's just a dream, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just a dream to. I don't know. We never thought we'd do YouTube. We never thought I'd do any of this. It's just like from a year ago to how it is now, or 14 months ago to how it is now, is our lives have totally changed, like crazily changed from going from just like normal people going to working in supermarkets with probably very little confidence and low self-esteem to people. What we are now, we can, you know, we've sailed across oceans and sailed so many beautiful places and
met some incredible people.
Yeah, the people we've met, and it's just incredibly changed our lives, really, for the better.
Yeah,
massively. Amazing. I think if you look at it from like a social perspective, it's like you've gone from living a life that's like very content and like, I don't want to say insular because it sounds that it comes off wrong, but you know when you're in like a small circle and everything's comfortable, yes. You know what I mean? And nothing's really pushing you. And that is a normal life. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But like you've gone from that in a very short period of time to literally being like citizens of the planet, meeting everybody, your face is all over the internet. Do you know what I mean? Like it's such a dramatic change in lifestyle. It's insane. It's crazy how much it's changed so quick.
Yeah,
it's been hard at times because in our past, I mean, I only had a very small group of friends, and I was never a very outgoing person, or I was never that one at the party who would jump on the dance floor. I was just, you know, a bit quiet and stuff like that. So from going from that to where we are now, as you said, you know, we're all over the internet and everyone wants to talk to you and you're meeting loads of new people and telling stories, and it's just a world away from what we used to be like. And I never could imagine I would have the confidence to be able to do it, and it's all changed our lives for the better, all because of the YouTube and the people. And yeah, it's just
yeah,
random
thing.
Random thing.
Yeah. What part of doing this do you think has like changed your self-confidence? Do you think it's like, because I mean, there's a number of different things that have changed in your life, like meeting lots of new people, which you don't if you just live in, you know, like a town or a village or a place in the UK, like, you know, you just have the same people all the time. Is it like the travel, or is it like the physical ability things that you've ticked off your list, like the actual sailing? Like, what do you think's changed your confidence most?
I think it's a mixture of everything, really. The sailing, I never thought I would have the confidence or believe that we could actually sail across an ocean, and we did it, and that was just an absolutely amazing experience. And yeah, just traveling from country to country and meeting loads of different people, and yeah, just the whole experience. And the people in Nova Scotia,
incredible,
so generous, really friendly, really friendly,
crazily so.
Yeah, when we were in America, people would meet us and give us a care package. I don't know if you heard the Americans give out care packages.
Some people have offered to send me care packages, and I don't know what it means. But like, I've turned down a lot of them. I have no idea what it is, though. What is that?
It's normally like a parcel full of. So if you get your care package from America, a certain part, a certain state, it's loads of bits and pieces from that state, and maybe like a flag or a nice some nice food or some nice cheese
or some winter
clothes. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, some clothes, some stickers. What else do we have?
Beer.
Beer.
Anything, beer. Really.
Yeah.
Just nice stuff. Yeah.
Just really nice.
Incredible.
Stuff. We had a care package from a guy in New York, and he gave us a New York paper, New York bagels, the New York pickles.
Oh, nice.
Yana pickles and bananas.
Yeah. We only, this guy, we were motored in past his boat in a tender, and we spoke to him for 10 minutes. And then the next day we said, oh, we're going to leave. And then he brought over a care package. We only knew him for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It's quite incredible, really.
Some people are so generous. Like, I think you meet more of them when you travel because, like, well, I mean, generally, when you're living in your own community, you don't get people reaching out to you, you know, offering to just give you loads of stuff because you're just a part of the scenery. Do you know what I mean? But like, when you're traveling, like you do meet just some incredibly generous people. It's so nice.
It's lovely. I think all yachties tend to stick. Well, they all look after each other, don't they, yachties?
We've
been to so many places where we're on anchor, and especially down in the Caribbean where there's like maybe 50, 60 boats all crammed into one anchorage and everyone's on top of each other and we're always looking around for a British ensign on the back of someone. Like, oh, there's a Briton. Let's go over and see him. We'll jump in the tender. We'll go over there.
See what they're doing.
See who they are. And they're so inviting and they'll invite us on their boats and then we'll have some food, some drinks and share stories and exchange email addresses, contact details and move on to the next anchorage and meet someone else there.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. It is amazing, you know, and it's very much why I imagine it was probably like back in the day, you know, like when a traveler turned up and he'd just walk into an inn and like people would just like want to have a conversation and learn stories from them, that type of thing. But when I've like not this year, because I haven't done any cruising this year because I sold my boat, so getting a new boat now. Well, like last year, like whenever I turned to an anchorage, I was always just like, okay, like where's the UK? Where's the UK maritime flag? And it was like, you just go over, say hello, and it's like, oh, do you fancy a beer? It's like, okay. Yeah. You know, I'll just talk to you and drink, no problem. That's absolutely fine. But it's brilliant. It's amazing. Like, I think it'd be so nice if it was more like that in normal society still. Which probably isn't anymore, but we could get back to it.
Yeah, that's what's missing, I think, in normal society. People living in their houses, they just don't speak to anybody else. They just live their lives on their own in their own families, and it's really vitally missing in land-based
living. I think like the death of the pub has had something to do with that. Like especially with like the downfall of pubs in the UK. I mean, like smoking in a pub obviously isn't a great thing. Like you can get passive lung cancer and that type of stuff. But like stopping pubs from being able to smoke inside had a massive hit on people getting out within their local community and socializing. Because it was normal back in the 90s. Like you went to a pub, you know, everyone from the street was at the pub on a Friday. You'd get to talk to all your neighbours and have a little chinwag. The smoking stopped that. And I think just like generally the price of booze, like when they started putting loads of tax on it. Because I remember when I used to go out when I was younger, you could get a pint for like £1.50. Like, that's like 5-6 quid now.
Yeah, I remember the days.
It had a pretty big effect on it.
Totally. And so many pubs have closed down now. Like, you go down your local pub, as you said, and after work and stuff. But they're all gone now. They've all been either closed or turned into apartments or a local small supermarket has taken over the pub.
They do, Tesco.
Express. Sorry, I've just got a little thing caught in my throat. Yeah. We woke up 2 days ago, me and my wife. I've no idea how. But we just woke up completely sick. We've had like bad throats for 2 days. We are from Wigan, so I'm pretty sure Wigan at one point had like the most pubs per square mile, like in the UK. Wouldn't surprise me if that was true. Although I don't know, maybe Cardiff would like be pretty high up there as well.
But lots in Cardiff. Remember there was loads in Barry where we grew up. And they're pretty much all gone. There's only a very few handful left in Barry now. A lot of them have, closed down. Mm. Which is a shame, really. We love Barry. We grew up in Barry as kids, and we were always down there, down the beach, weren't we? Climbing over the rocks and looking for crabs to crab in on the Bristol Channel. And
crabbing.
Yeah, always down the beach. I love
yeah.
it.
I remember I was there when I was a kid, and we went down to one of the beaches where they were, I don't know if they were crabbing or if they were getting like little some things in shells, mussels or something. I don't know what they were, but people were picking up stuff off the rocks and all that. And we like found a massive starfish. So I remember I picked up this starfish and I put it in like a bucket and I tried to keep it alive. I mean, I don't want to say I killed it, but I do think I killed it by keeping it in a bucket for a little while. Yeah. Wow. I was only young, I didn't know.
Like a pet.
Yeah, for a pet for an hour, and then I think it perished. Anyway, moving on, that makes me sound like a murderer. So, being brothers, have you always been close, or have you always like lived together or close to each other? Because like going from having independent lives to then like living in a 34 foot boat, that's like quite intense. But has it been normal? Like, have you always been close to the point where you don't mind sharing space?
Yeah, we've always been close to brothers, haven't we?
Really close. Yeah, we always said we should have been born as twins because we've been that
close. Right.
But yeah, we've lived together quite a lot of our adult lives, but we've had our own separate flats. We've always lived like really close to each other, like within a couple of miles of each other, really.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, we were really, really close as kids. We've done everything together as kids. We've got another brother, older brother, Andrew, and we all used to hang out together. But I think me and Luke were the closest. And we grew up and we sort of went our separate ways a little bit. I had my own flat. Luke had his flat. I had a partner. Then I had another partner who had a son, and we just, that sort of faded away a little bit. And then Luke, I think we
sailed our second boat, Sabre 27, around the UK. Oh, yeah. And then when we got back to, because before we sailed around the UK the first time, we got rid of our flats, our rental flats, and sold all our furniture and just moved onto this boat to sail around the UK, thinking it was going to last forever and never end. But things always come to an end. And then we got back to Cardiff. We had nowhere to live. So we had no choice but to live on the Sabre 27. So we lived on the Sabre 27 for about, about 2 years, wasn't it?
2 years.
Yeah, about 2 years. So really cold. And that is really much smaller than this boat, the 34 foot boat. I suppose we just got used to living in each other's pockets then.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we've always been close though.
Up to what you were doing now, I mean, like traveling around the UK, that's something that you can do and take time off from. And you know, if you ever wanted space or whatever, one of you can go back and work, or one of you can stay on the boat, wherever it is. But like the decisions to then take the boat like down and then across the Atlantic and back up, like that's like a whole nother level compared to what you were doing before, which was like sailing around Britain. Did you think about like, is this actually going to work? Are we going to get along? Or was there just no question there at all?
No, I did think about it. I thought, what happens if we go off down the south and it doesn't work, and you know, what we're going to do, because we've got, you know, basically nowhere to live other than the boat, because this boat is our home. Yeah. So I was thinking, like, once we were like in America or something, or wherever we are across the Atlantic, and it's not working, what do we do? We'll have to sail home and then sort of sell the boat. Yeah, it was always a concern, but it just seems to work out.
Yeah, we do argue a little bit.
A tiny bit.
Now and again. I mean, it's not healthy not to argue and just keep feelings bottled up. Like now and again,
of course,
shout at Luke until I'm red in the face, and he'll shout at me, and then it's over. Then we've got it out, and it's finished.
Yeah. That's very rare, though.
It is very rare. Although we've only got a small boat, and these older boats, this rival, it's not very beamy, so it's not that big inside, but Luke's got his side of the boat, and I've got my side of the boat. So, I'll my side is a starboard side, and Luke's not allowed to sit here. Well, he is now.
No. He is today, yeah.
But I've got all my cupboards and all my personal belongings in this side of the boat. And Luke's got his stuff on that side of the boat.
It's my side. So, not allowed on my side.
Yeah. So that helps separate things. And
it sounds silly, doesn't it?
It does sound silly. But
it does work.
It does.
Because you've only...
It does work, yeah.
Yeah, you got your own personal space, and that is like my sitting bit, and if Adam sits on that side, I tell him to move because he's not allowed to sit on my side. He's going to sit on his side. Sounds so silly, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So how did you both get on board with like crossing the Atlantic? So obviously it was your idea, but Adam, you were like a bit more reserved about doing it. How did you convince him into doing that?
Yeah, I was a bit like, I've always been a bit more cautious. And the thing is, we left our jobs, but we were guaranteed our jobs to go back to once we'd finished the UK thing. That was the arrangement we had with our jobs. And Luke was like, I don't want to go back to work. I just want to make this work, isn't it?
Yeah, why should we? Because I got the mentality that you should be, you know, you're put on the earth, you're born, and then you should be not working all your lives. You should be adventuring and living, trying to live free as much as possible.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was trying to convince you, wasn't I?
And trying to convince me. And
then he phoned our mum and said, oh, we're thinking of going across the Atlantic, we're not going back to work. And she was crying on the phone.
I bet she's scared shitless, yeah.
Yeah, we're really worried.
She didn't want us to go, and was like, "Oh my god, this is the right decision." But we knew in our hearts that we really wanted to go and carry on and go sail across the Atlantic because that was our dream.
What's our dream? I mean, we had, I think, at the time once we finished the circumnavigation of the UK, I think we probably had maybe about between 6,000 and 7,000 subscribers. And we had maybe 10 patrons, and it wasn't enough to sustain us to live. But we thought if we go back to work, then all that momentum we talked about earlier, that's all going to stop. So we really should try and make the effort, and Luke wants to anyway, and refit the boat and just go for it. Just head south.
Go for it, yeah. Live. You only live once.
Exactly.
You've got to live once.
Yeah, but it was.
You have to take risks as well, isn't it? Like it's risks that pay off. Playing it safe rarely does. I mean, like Luke, that feeling you had, which was, you know, you do need to take some risks, and you need to leave, and we need to go for it. Let's cross the Atlantic and all that type of stuff. Where did that come from? Was that like, have you always been like that? Have you always been the person who wants to like dive in the deep end? Or is it specifically to sailing and like crossing the Atlantic and doing it all by boat? Or is it more your nature?
That's a double one. You've always been there, haven't you?
Sorry, that was quite a tough question, I know.
Has it always been with boats or no?
Definitely with boats.
Yeah, most of it has been with boats. I remember working my first job in Trophy Miniatures in Barry when I was like 18. I wanted to leave my job and go off down Three Cliffs Bay in Tenby and live in a tent on the beach. Just be free. It sounds crazy, but I just wanted to go down there and just live free and just live in the wild for a few months or a few years, just living down the beach on my own. It's crazy, isn't it? That sounds mad. Just get away from the just get away from the normal society. And then as I grew older, I just realized how pointless it is. I know most people do it. I'm not, you know, most people have to do it because they've got families and they've got bills to pay. But just working all your lives, and then you're allowed to have the weekends, a weekend off, and then you've got to go back to work again. And then the first time we sailed across the UK, we sailed from Cardiff to, where was it?
Porter's Head,
and we went to Wetherspoons there. And I said to Adam, "Why don't we sail around the UK?" And Adam was like, "What?" You've got a sand sailor on the UK, you're going mad. Don't be so silly.
We had flats.
Yeah.
We had our own lives. We had furniture. We had jobs, full-time jobs. I said, Luke, you're absolutely nuts.
Yeah. I said, oh.
Which is a normal reaction, really.
Yeah, totally.
I said, we should just go for it. We got no ties. We got no family. We got no kids. We got no, like, mortgages. We just got basic, like, rubbish jobs, basically. Mm. But they were good jobs at the time. It's my best job ever. But I said, we got no ties. Let's just get in the boat, get rid of the flats, and just sail around the UK. So I had an adventure. And then I persuaded Adam again. And then that's how it all started, really, in 2017 on our Sabre 27.
Yeah.
Crazy,
yeah, that's really cool.
Mm.
So, like, just in terms of the journey that you've made so far, like, what stands out for you? I mean, obviously, like, getting across the Atlantic was a major thing for you. That's, like, a big achievement. But just, like, little things along the way that you've experienced or learned, places you've been, is there any particular things that stand out? I know you said, like, anchoring in New York City was, like, a big one. That's a big one for me as well. I can't wait to do that. But, like, talk about those a little bit. Like, what are some of those moments that have, like, really enlightened you?
Go on.
For me, it was swimming. It was two things. Swimming in the middle of the Atlantic, 4,000 meters of water when it was totally flat, calm. They were becalmed. The water was so blue and crystal clear. Just going for the swimming there, because it's always been my dream to swim in, like, when you're becalmed. And then the second thing was the Mahi Mahi, following the boat. Because every time we went in, like, two knots in a boat across the Atlantic, we got Mahi Mahi just slowly following a boat. That was amazing to see. Such massive, beautiful fish just slowly following you. Incredible. That was my
thing.
And then what about you? What were your moments?
I always vividly remember the day we set off from Cape Verde. That's the start of our Atlantic crossing. And the excitement, the building that night trying to get to sleep was so, I couldn't really sleep properly because I was so excited for the next day when we were going to leave. The feeling we're leaving Cape Verde and setting off, knowing that we're going to be crossing. We're leaving Cape Verde now, leaving land, and we're going to cross an ocean. And there's, we've got all that huge, vast distance ahead of us, and thinking about what it's going to be like, how long it's going to take, whether we're going to run into any, you know, strong trade winds and things. That feeling was amazing. And then once we turned up at Martinique, that early that morning, and you could see the island just coming out of the darkness, and you could feel the heat coming off the land, and you could smell the vegetation coming off the land. And that feeling, wow, I love that feeling. That's really stood out for me big time. And the New York thing as well. That was incredible, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So imagine to sail our boat all the way into New York Harbor and anchoring next to the Statue of Liberty. And then that evening, just looking up at the skyline when it all started lighting up from, started getting dark and all the skyline lighting up one day. And we're looking out thinking, wow, I cannot believe we actually managed to sail our boat here. Mind blowing. Makes all your hair up and stuff. Yeah, I love it.
It's great because it's like the opposite type of landscape to what you would actually expect living on a boat is, you know, when you're just jumping in between anchorages and islands and beaches and stuff. It's like bang being in the middle of like Manhattan. It's like, I just imagine that to be quite cool. It's something I'm looking forward to a lot. I was actually anchored like right in front of you in Cape Verde. I think you got in like the day before we were going to leave, I think, something like that. Where was it? I can't remember the name of the anchorage or the island, actually. Crap. Man, my memory's pretty shit. But yeah, I think you were right behind us, like near the, there was like this big abandoned ship in the water. Actually, that anchorage was filled with abandoned boats. Like they're all over the place.
Yeah, just, like, there's loads there.
Yeah. Just like dodging them as you were like taking your dinghy in.
Yeah, I remember that Anchorage. Really windy. Every day windy.
Yeah.
Get stuck going to shore, taking that tender to shore into that club. Yeah, the little marina thing.
Where did you go from
there? Yeah, little floating bar. Martinique. Yeah, so we will do, like, the reason why we went to Cape Verde is because wasn't my boat. I was just helping out a couple of friends. They had I think the baby was like 3 months old or 6 months, something like that. It was a tiny baby. So they just wanted to break up the trip. And they also both got like seasickness and they were feeling quite ill as well. So they wanted to like break up the trip. So that was the reason for going there. Although we should have shot straight across because we have like amazing trade winds. And then we were fighting it on like the rear quarter as we were going down there. It was pretty unpleasant because it's quite a light boat. So we were just getting like knocked around and almost broaching as well, like quite a few times. Yeah, then when we got to Cape Verde, I think we were hanging out for like 2 weeks for trade winds to kick in. And they never actually kicked in. Like we crossed the Atlantic and we actually did not have trade winds. We had a few days where the wind was like coming right on the stern. But we didn't get any consistent trade winds at all. I think we averaged like 4 knots all the way across. It was terrible. It lasted forever.
How long did it take you?
I think from Cape Verde to Martinique, I think it was 21 days. Yeah, which was a long time.
Yeah, we had 22.
Or it was.
Even longer.
Yeah, well, it depends what you like, what you used to or what you want. But like when we're on a boat that can like comfortably sail at 6.5 knots, like for me to be sat there and it's doing 4 is like pretty irritating because I like to get the most out of the boat. And I like to like tweak the sails so you know you're getting everything out of them. So yeah, it was winding me up. It was it was pleasant. But yeah, 2 kgs. So I think you set off slightly after us. Did you actually get trade winds?
Well, we got Bacan for 3 days.
Yeah,
I think it was like the second day. It looked like day 2 after leaving Cape Verde. We were Bacan for like 3 days. It was nothing. And that's when we went into the water to swim and we were just looking for something to do.
Going crazy, I think.
We were drinking loads and loads of our water supply because it was so hot. And then we're thinking, you know, we're drinking too much water here. We might have to go back to Cape Verde and get some more because I started panicking. Luke was like, no, we've got enough water, we're fine. But I'm like, oh, my God, we're drinking too much water. So then I started writing everything down, how much litres of water we're drinking per day to try and make it last.
And you were getting a bit angry, weren't you, because you're like saying, oh, you drunk 3 liters today. You're drinking too much. And I was like, I got to drink. I got to be alive.
Yeah.
Just scared of running out of water and dying out there. That's one of my main fears, really, running out of water. But we had plenty by the time we got there, didn't we?
Yeah, loads
of water.
How many liters do you actually keep on your boat?
We have 360 litres for the Atlantic crossing.
So for the two of you for 20 days, yeah, that's quite a lot. Yeah, you're doing fine.
Yeah, because we got an unconventional like water system. We got a bag underneath our main saloon area, which holds 120 litres. And then we got 3 barrels in the cockpit, which we just keep tied up. They have 75 litres. And then we got like plastic water bag containers, the whole 10 liters each, and then we had a number of them and we just put them in different lockers and just try and distribute the weight around, to try and balance the boat. That's how we're doing it.
Yeah, those little like flexible transparent bags are actually brilliant. Do you know, like just for taking to shore if you want to fill them up and bring like 10 litres back to your boat or something. I got a bunch of those off Amazon and I used them a ton last summer. Like they were really handy.
Yeah, that's where we got ours. Mm. Just bought a load, didn't we?
Yeah, we bought a load.
Yeah.
And then Adam started collecting water, didn't you, halfway across?
Yeah, well, 2 of our bags split. I think, I don't know why, but they were in one of the lockers and there was water. We heard some water in one of the lockers sloshing around. And I took the stuff out of the locker and 2 of the bags split in there. And then I started panicking even more then about dying at sea. We started making use of the rain showers. As further we got out in the Atlantic, we had a few thunderstorms and more rain showers. So what I ended up doing was making a water catcher. Just I had one of the big, like, 2 litre bottles. I cut the head off it and I turned it upside down and I put it on the boom next to the gooseneck on the boom, and I tied it there. And I connected it to a water bag, and every time it rained, the rain would rinse off the sail. Obviously, I'd rinse the sail first to get the salt off it, and then start collecting the water. It's amazing how much water you can collect that's running down off your mainsail, down the boom into water bags. Only in like a 10-minute shower, you could fill up 10 litres of water in 10 minutes. Amazing, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, easy. Yeah, that's really good, yeah. So just like in terms of what the plan is, because like you said originally, why don't we like do an Atlantic circuit then come back? Is that still the idea? Because you've got momentum on your side. Do you not want to keep it going and like try and like head back down south or, you know, do something a bit different? Like what's the plan?
Yeah, we're not. Our original plan was to go back to the UK, but we're not going back to the UK anymore. Mum's a bit gutted about that, but gotta try and keep it going. We're gonna sail in early October, which is a risk. We're gonna get stuck in a gale. Well, we're bound to get stuck in a gale sooner or later. In early October, we're gonna go from Nova Scotia and we're gonna try and sail from here to Guadeloupe in one hit. So it's about 2,000 nautical miles. All right. Yeah, we want to miss out, what's it called, Bermuda? Because it's too expensive. It's like ridiculously expensive there.
Yeah, yeah, it's very expensive.
Yeah, and then we're going to head for the Panama Canal. And we're going to go through that, didn't we?
We are.
And then that's the plan. I'm not sure what we're doing yet then. We might go up the West Coast against the trade winds of America. Or we might just head straight across the Pacific Ocean, go to New Zealand and Australia and carry on around the world, basically. Mm.
Wow. Like, it really escalated from, you know, just sailing around the UK to like sailing around the planet.
Yeah,
that's quite funny. And, like, this guy's just being, like, blagged into the whole thing, I imagine.
Yeah, it's always Luke comes up with the ideas.
Yeah, like, got up for speed.
Doing the Atlantic.
I don't know why.
And then we were going to, yeah, as you said, we were going to cross back to the UK because it was called the Atlantic Circuit Adventure. And then that was the idea. And then Luke said, no, I don't want to do that. I want to carry on. Let's go around the world instead. Oh, yeah. Okay, then.
It's only a suggestion. No, I'm not forcing you to do this, but.
No, but I want to do it.
You can go back to Iceland if you want.
No, I don't want to do that.
They could sail to Iceland from where you are. That's also another option. That would be quite cool.
Options. Yeah, I think the difficult thing is going to be leaving here. Yeah. In Nova Scotia and trying to get down south back to the Caribbean. I mean, we can't leave too early in the season because of hurricane season, obviously, down there. And we can't leave here too late because the chances of
gale weather up there.
Bad weather is vastly increased. So it's going to be a bit of a balancing act to get down. And as you know, the wind around here is like mainly west or southwesterlies against us. So I think we'll have to wait for a decent weather window. I think in the autumn around Canada, they do have decent northwesterlies. So we'll make use of that to try and get south as fast as we can near Bermuda and then pick up some of the trades to get all the way down there, isn't it?
Yeah, we always study the pilot charts before making decisions. And in October, the pilot charts say there's the predominant wind is kind of northwesterly, isn't it, instead of southwesterly. So we're going to try and get that. And then the chances of hitting a gale from here to Bermuda, because they say as soon as you get to Bermuda and south of Bermuda, you're pretty safe. Well, you might run into a hurricane, but but before here and Bermuda, there's about 4 to 5% chance that we're going to get stuck in a gale system. That's what the pilot charts say, but it's all...
That's pretty low.
Yeah, it's all about looking at the weather and trying to find that. You need like 6 days. It's about 700 miles. So 6 days to get down there, and then we're going to be pretty safe. And if no hurricanes coming, we'll be fine.
Yeah. But it's... Are you planning on sticking like quite close to the coast for that? Or are you thinking of actually getting a bit offshore and then going south? Like, what's the plan?
I don't know. Difficult one.
We're not going to go next to the coast, are we?
No, I don't think we're going to go next to the coast. I mean, we have, even if bad weather comes, we haven't really got an option to go back into the USA because our 3 month visa ran out and you're not allowed to enter back into the US and you can't renew your visa straight away. I mean, if you had to go back into the US because of bad weather, then they'd have to let you in. But I think we're going to be going straight down, isn't it?
Yeah.
Straight offshore.
We'll head offshore. And we got a Garmin inReach Mini. I mean, and then we got two weather guys. We got a weather guy in Norway. And then we got David S. Wheatley in southern England. He's like a weather expert, he is. So if there's like low pressure systems coming in, he'll say, you know, this is where this tracking, get out the way or head down with it or whatever, trying to get out of the way of it, basically. Yeah. Isn't it?
Very experienced, yeah. Weather guy. And it's nice to know that we got contact with people on land who give us weather, daily weather, and they can pretty much tell us if we need to turn to port or starboard or, you know, just to get into the best weather conditions. And that's nice, isn't it? Really nice.
Reassuring.
Yeah, that's invaluable. Yeah, I mean, it's just having a different person's take on it when you're out there as well. Like, you know, he doesn't necessarily need to be an expert, but just another sailor, even if they're just chiming in with like whatever their experience is and give this a try or that a try. Are you planning on spending a bit of time in the Caribbean? Because you basically arrived and then sailed north. Are you planning on hanging around there for a bit, or are you thinking of like just going straight for Panama after that and crossing through?
I think we're going to spend maybe...
We want to do some islands. Because we've only done Martinique and Guadeloupe and British Virgin Islands. We're going to go back to Guadeloupe.
Oh, we need to do the Bahamas.
Yeah. It's American, though. We can't get in.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Like that. So it's the same visa for America that you need for the Bahamas?
Yeah, it is.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we'd love to go to the Bahamas, but they're really strict on COVID and you need like a license and things like that. So, yeah, like the sailing mecca of the world, that place.
Bahamas, yeah, that'd be incredible if we get there. Yeah. Maybe next time when we circle the world and come back, we'll go to the Bahamas.
Oh, so you're doing it now. You're the one who's going to be convincing him. The second circumnavigation is on you.
Yeah, I think so. It's on me. But... Yeah, I think we're going to island hop a little bit down there this coming winter and slowly make our way up to Panama and get through there.
Yeah, we're nervous about going through Panama, aren't we?
November, December.
Because it's
expensive, isn't it?
It's expensive, but...
Yeah, very. It's like doubled in price as well, like this year or last year, or can't remember, but the price is rocketed up for crossing through that canal.
Yeah, since the end of COVID, they've more than doubled the price of it to go through, which is
bonkers.
Need to make the money, don't they? It's like the world closed down business for two, like everyone's complaining about like BP and Shell are like, oh, they're all devils. I'm like, well, are they? Or did the politicians tell them that they're not allowed to make any money for 2 years? Like, is it them? Or is it the people who are making like decisions, you know? So if they're trying to make cash back for like not that many ships going through, all right, fair enough. Maybe I can get it. I don't know if it is though. Have you calculated how much it's going to cost to take your boat through?
Yeah. What's about it's about $2,500 to $3,000.
Yeah.
Oh, that is really steep.
Yeah. Shocking.
We did want to sail around the bottom that go down south Brazil, but we're not.
Yeah.
Can't do it now because Chile's still closed due to COVID, so we can't go up the coast.
Yeah.
Bit annoying, really.
That's also a hell of a journey as well. Like taking on the Cape and going all the way down there. Like, it's going to have so much time. Mm. And just hard sailing, like, that's going to have a lot of wear on your boat as well, whereas just going through the Panama Canal, it's like pretty easy. So yeah. It's not exactly a challenge. You've got people pulling you, you know, like through the actual canal. So yeah, it's not that challenging.
Yeah, it takes 3 days to get through Panama.
Yeah, it takes like a year to get on the bottom.
Yeah, we'd have to.
It's my idea.
Yeah. It was his idea, and he said, "Oh, let's cross the Atlantic over to the Azores, and go from the Azores down to the Canaries, Cape Verde, and Cape Verde to Brazil, and then down the coast of Brazil, Argentina, and then there's a pass near the bottom that you can go through, like the old ships used to go through there. It's against the trade as well. It is, yeah. And it's going to be freezing cold down there, and it will come out
on the
side where there's loads of lows and loads of cold weather and windy, and then wait for a decent weather window to sail north up the coast in the Pacific. And it's all, if you look on Google Maps, it's all mountains with snow caps.
Yeah.
And nothing there.
Yeah. It's pretty tough. I just did a crossing with my mate James, and we went from like the Azores and brought a boat back to Spain. And we were just having like some discussions about good ideas of stuff to do. And it's like, if you're going to do, if you're going to like sail like around the coast of South America, you're not that far away from the Antarctic. And the conditions are pretty terrible. Yeah. So it's like we were talking about like what would it take to do it, and I think it was like, I think it's like a 600-mile passage or some 600 nautical mile passage, and then you're pretty much like right down there. You'd have to love sailing, a dangerous weather sailing, to think about doing something like that, I think.
Yeah,
yeah.
Don't fancy Luke. It now. You put me on.
No, you love long passages, don't you? You love being at sea, Luke does.
Yeah, I love it.
That was the attraction to it. Being so hard and being at sea and pushing ourselves to go down there and
the breaking point.
To do it, yeah.
Challenging.
Yeah.
I just like being at sea for long, isolated periods. Like, across the Atlantic for 22 days, I loved it. It was just like, so peaceful and away from everything, and I just, you know, just being proper survival and just relying on your own boats and everything, really. I just loved it.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, it's just a good time to think as well. Like, you know, there's nothing pinging you, there's no emails coming through. You know, it can give you like a really different perspective on some like dilemmas that you might have, where you just you've only got your thoughts, and if you've got someone around you who you can talk to, that's good. But otherwise, it's just you and your mind, which can be dangerous. But you know, if you've got a few things you want to sort out, it can also be quite a good way to spend time.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know how these people sail solo across an ocean. I don't think I could do that.
No, I know me.
Yeah, it's like there's people who do it by themselves, and they do it with like, you know, radars and equipment, and they've got the alarms, setups and AIS, and like, I respect that a hell of a lot. Having technology there with you, like, you know, weather routers and all sorts, it does make it relatively safe, especially if you've got a boat that's set up quite well and you can see storms approaching. But like, there's people that do it with like no technology. Like, they will literally just do it in like a very old boat, you know, no GPSs, no like radars or anything like that. And that's wild. By themselves doing that, like, that is next level stuff. I've got a lot of respect for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Any solo sailor is so hard. And to do all the sail changes yourself and all the watches yourself. It must be horrendous. I can't imagine doing that without a brother to do it with or somebody else. I imagine that.
Yeah. I think it just depends on your circumstances, doesn't it? Like, I think for a lot of people, trying to find somebody else who will sail around the world with you on a small boat is like, it's a pretty limited candidate pool to start off with, I'd expect. So, like, you've got that. Then finding someone who would do it, who you, like, just wouldn't want to kill, because being in such a small, confined space, somebody could wind you up so much. Like, there's not many people who are up for that type of thing. So, I think that's why a lot of people just end up doing it on their own. because, yeah, it's pretty hard to find people who'd actually want to do it. Or you can take crew, like a lot of people do that. Like I've done podcasts with quite a few people who sail by themselves, but then when it comes to passages, they'll take on like a few crew members, that type of thing. I think I'd be up for that. But yeah, like me, the idea of me being on a boat for 20 days on my own with nothing but myself, that's horrible. I would hate it for me. Like, I know I would not have a good time doing that.
No, I would hate it. It would be awful. Just be so
lonely
to feel like, oh my God, I don't know. Just be horrible.
No one to share your thoughts and feelings with, and the workload's going to be doubled. And it's a long time to be by yourself, isn't it? It's a long time.
Yeah, it's tough. So, like, just like looking ahead, because you've got a rough idea of the plan, like where you want to go and like the challenges that you want to take on. What are the next big moments that you think you're looking forward to, like arriving somewhere or achieving a certain type of thing? What do you think is going to tick the box next for you?
Crossing the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah. That's the next one.
Yeah.
Arriving in New Zealand.
That would be amazing. Yeah,
I think if when we are going to cross, we're going to go probably from Panama to French Polynesia, which is, I believe, about 30 days maybe at sea.
Yeah,
that's going to be pretty special, being right in the center of the Pacific Ocean, surrounded by these volcanic islands. That's going to be amazing.
Stunning. And
when we leave there and make another long passage then over to the New Zealand, isn't it?
Yeah, New Zealand.
That's going to be pretty special as well. You know, we're so far from home. Looking forward to that.
It's, you know, it's cool because it's like once you've done the Atlantic and you've done the Pacific, you've got like, you've got some long passages, but you can kind of like coastal cruise the way back from that point. Not directly, but you've got a few passages, but you can like hop the way back. You've not got any 30 days, you know what I mean? Pending, you know, lockdowns or whatever, I don't know. But like you've definitely taken on the biggest challenges that would be thrown at you in terms of passage making, I think. Maybe like the Indian Ocean is probably some challenges there, but I think in terms of like the length and the distance, like you've definitely combated most of it.
It sounds so disappointing, doesn't it? No 30 days left.
Then he finished.
Yeah, I'm sure we can. I don't know. I hope it's not like that. I hope we can do some long passages, like a week or 2 week passages. I'm just sure we'll mix them up and go somewhere.
Oh, yeah, you can. Yeah, like, I just mean if you wanted to like go to every country, you could like hop your way back pretty much if you fancied it.
Yeah, I think I would like to go to Japan, sail up to Japan. I'm not sure on the train.
Oh, nice.
Look at the tour, but I've always wanted to go to Japan and have a look there because it's meant to be a lovely country.
Yeah.
I'd like to sail there and maybe back down again.
I'd like to go to some unusual places that not many cruisers go to. So everyone just seems, most cruisers stick to the same sort of routes and routing and the same places, but we want to do things differently. That's why we didn't go through Panama Canal the past winter, and we decided to do the East Coast of America and now in Canada, even though we knew it was going to get cold and it's going to be tough to get back down to the Caribbean. But it was a challenge. It's different. We want to go to these different places and experience all these different cultures and meet loads of people from all around the world. And hopefully one day when we get back, we'll write a book about it all and put all our experiences in a book. That would be cool. I'd love to do that.
I'm going to write a book.
No, I think it's great. I think it's a great, honestly, it's such a cool story because it's like there's so many people who are probably in a situation like you were and you know, maybe they just dream about it. I don't know. Or maybe they think about it at night about, you know, like traveling or going somewhere or doing something different. But, you know, the circumstances that they're in just hold them back or make them think that it's absolutely not possible. Whereas, like, you two are, you know, perfect examples of, like, no, you can do whatever it is you want to do. You just need to, like, be creative, work hard, and find a solution for it. I think it's a great example for people. Like, you should give speeches and, like, you know, go motivate people to, you know, do just travel, just go and do incredible things.
Yeah, live life.
Yeah,
working all the time.
So is the YouTube stuff that's like, that is able to fund like your cruising kit, you know, so you're able to carry on your journey. You don't need to make a plan of going back to work.
No, so
yes, funded. Yeah. Patrons.
Nice.
That YouTube doesn't bring that much, but the patrons, because we got like so many patrons, like 193 patrons, which is crazy because you only got 11,000 subscribers. That is funding that's funding everything to carry on and not even think about going back to work. We're just going to carry on and sail around the world for the next 5-6 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good on you. That's really cool. Yeah. I was going to say as well, it's like, because like a lot of people send me emails and messages like, oh, can you please interview these people? Because I want to know what they're like, or can you interview these people? Like, you guys have come up like the most, probably by like double or triple what anybody else has, like the messages and emails that I get saying, oh, can you please get these guys on? Can you please get these guys on? So yeah, it's like everyone wants to know your story, or they probably just like want to sit in the boat and have a beer with you, which I hope most people do when they listen to these things.
That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know why that is. Like, maybe because I think we're just two normal people who had a dream and had normal jobs, and now we're like just somewhere completely different, aren't we? And
we're not rich or anything.
No. Yeah.
We have to work hard for everything we, you know, like when we were working in Asda, I was doing 50-hour weeks and, yeah, it was hard work. And, you know, we didn't grow up with much money, so we just worked hard for it. And when we first bought Atlas, we lent like £10,000 off our mum. She gave us some money for it. And then over the next 6 months, then we just working. We were just paying her back. And we paid all that back. So we own this boat 100% ourselves, just through working through supermarkets. And we bought this boat. So, yeah, it's kind of special. There's no bank loans or, yeah, it's just hard work. And it's
hard work and motivation.
It feels real rewarding, it does.
Yeah, I can imagine. And like, yeah. It's quite funny because you were like, yeah, I don't know why that is. And then you just explained why that is. That's exactly why. Like, that's why people want to listen to it. Because it's like, yeah, it's very humbling. And I think it's like, when you watch people cruising around on, you know, big boats or fancy boats, or they've already made it in life and they've got cash or whatever, it's like, It's nice to watch, but it's a lot more inspiring when you see people similar to yourselves. Like, I'm from a council estate in Wigan. So, like, for me, you know, like, listening to your story, it's like, you know, two lads who, I used to work in Summerfield as well, which weren't a very good employer, but I won't go into the Summerfield days. But yeah, it's much more interesting and inspiring to listen to than, like, you know, a bunch of, I don't know, average stories out there. Not, you know, degrading anyone else's story. So it's very inspiring. Like, it's very cool.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice to know. And we get so many messages and emails, and yeah, lots of messages from people who say that we've inspired them, and we inspire them so much that they've actually gone out and bought their very first boat.
Yes, awesome, amazing. I love hearing that.
And yeah, they keep in contact with us and say, oh, we've just managed to go out on our first night passage thanks to you, and it was scary, or we were sick, or we've sailed from here to here, and it's all thanks to you guys. And we're just like, well, we're just normal guys just filming our crazy antics, sailing and eating lots of cheese, love our cheese, and we just stick it on YouTube, and people seem to absolutely love it, and it just makes us smile, doesn't it?
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, it feels nice that people are going out and getting sailing. Like there was a guy in Asda I used to work with. He's gone out and he's now doing dinghy courses in Cardiff Bay, and he keeps on updating me how he's doing. Wow. Yeah, he's like started sailing, and he said he's absolutely loving it all because he's been watching the videos and he knew me from Asda. So really. Our uncle started sailing as well.
Yeah, Uncle Phil started dinghy sailing. Yeah. He's a retired motorcycle police officer. Mm. And he's and yeah, he's just started dinghy sailing now, and he's absolutely loving it. I think he's going to go in for his courses and get himself a small boat.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
He loves it. Brilliant.
Yeah. Get people back out on the water and enjoy the beautiful ocean and get the wind in the sails. There's nothing else like it, and the peacefulness. It's amazing. Really nice.
Yeah. No, it's good. Like, you're doing well, lads. So fair play to you, and you deserve it as well. So listen, thanks for taking the time to talk and for getting a little bit of your story out there. Like, I know everybody will really appreciate it because loads of people have been asking me for it. So thanks so much for doing that, and I wish you the best.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, I really, really appreciate it, mate. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Cool.